Welcome back to the Bumblecast, everyone. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is my 24-hour tech support, Kyle Krause.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm just trying to get this podcast done, and I keep getting these errors. I've been on hold for the past 30 minutes, and the music has kind of ingrained itself in my brain. So can we just get this done? I've restarted everything. I've followed the manual. What do I do now?
Have you tried hitting it?
Repeatedly.
Okay, good.
Metal bat and wooden bat. I've been through this before.
You're on the right track then. Have you tried turning into a robot for a second?
No, of course not. I'm sorry. I try to do all these things before I call and rest.
Well, you've turned into a robot for at least a second twice now. So you're ahead of me. So, yeah.
We apologize for the technical difficulties on this episode. We've been jumping through a few hoops and haven't been able to get it to work, so we're just going to do the episode all bippity-boopity.
Yeah. It sounds all right so far. So we're just going to keep rolling with it, and hopefully we'll keep it together.
So have you been, sir? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been kind of just hanging in there. You know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently, I kind of been jumping back into Borderlands, the pre-sequel. I don't know if you've had the chance to play any of the Borderlands games yet.
I am, I think, 2/3 through the main campaign of Borderlands 2, and I got kind of burned out, so I'm taking a break from it.
Ah, yes. I played through Borderlands 2 a couple of years ago, back in like 2013, 2014, somewhere around there. And I really enjoyed it a lot, but after I got through the main campaign and did some of the DLC campaigns, I did get kind of burned out with it too and kind of moved on from there. But a couple months ago, I picked up Borderlands the pre-sequel and started playing it then, and then kind of just set it down, set it aside, and set most video games aside for a little while. But I started getting back into it, and I'm really enjoying it. It's got really good characters. I like a lot of the characters a lot. It's basically just a lot of... It's a fun RPG shooter. I mean, that's really all I can say about it. I can't go into much more details about it. I'm not as far into it as I'd like to be, but yeah. What have you liked about Borderlands 2?
Handsome Jack, far and away.
Handsome Jack is great, yes.
And big props to the voice actor for managing to do someone so charmingly evil,
mm-hmm.
but also convincingly human when the script calls for it. It doesn't feel like they're losing track of who the character is. It feels like a truly unhinged egomaniac. And it's a very fine line to get that right, and he does a phenomenal job with it.
Yeah. The pre-sequel kind of explores his character and sort of how he came to be, because he wasn't originally so unhinged. He's a little eccentric, but he's definitely not an entirely crazy person, and he's not evil, at least in the pre-sequel. Things definitely change when it comes to Borderlands 2, though. things have changed, but it really kind of, it gives him a whole more rounded persona, so I'm enjoying it a lot. Who are you playing through as right now?
I picked the Gunzerker.
Ah, yes.
Because I can't aim, and his thing is shoot lots and lots. So I figured just by the law of averages, if I throw enough stuff at the enemies, it'll work out. And for the most part, it has.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the same philosophy with the character I went through Borderlands 2 with, which was Gage the Mechromancer.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you can't hit anything, just summon a giant freaking robot to mess crap up, and you're good to go. She basically can materialize a robot out of thin air that just goes in and just demolishes everything. It's pretty fantastic.
I like it.
And, of course, the more you shoot anything, the more you shoot and hit anything, the crazier she gets. She just goes insane. And damage gets boosted, and I think, like, aiming or something doesn't matter. I forgot. It's been a while since I played it, so I'm kind of forgetting. But there's, like, you go into anarchy mode and things just get wackadoo crazy. It's a lot of fun. So what have you been up to, Ian?
I have been, well, last show I said I was working, and this show I'm really working.
Uh-oh.
Because since we last got all together, us and the Bumblecasters out there, two new projects kind of fell into my lap out of the blue, and I'm really hyped for the both of them. It's just, you know, I was already kind of spinning a number of plates, juggling a few chainsaws, flaming chainsaws, as it were. So I've had to go, okay, these things need to go on a shelf for now, because these things are here and now, and it's a bit crazy. But as long as I manage my time well, I should be fine.
Well, we're doing this show, so I don't know if that's time well managed or not.
It is entertaining people out there on the internet. It is time well spent, sir.
We're creating content for Bumble King. That counts for something, right?
Exactly. There are people who make it their life's mission to listen to this show every other Monday. And for the two of you, thank you so much.
Wow, two? Man, that's more than I expected.
Well, we've been around for a while. We're moving on up.
That's true. That's true. Maybe we can get a third one in a couple of years.
But let's not get too crazy,
Kyle. Okay, okay. Are we ready to announce our raffle winner for the raffle?
We are ready to announce our Bumble Raffle winner. The Bumble Raffle is our contest where you enter in and you get to win a free Sonic or Mega Man book signed by me, which is valuable to some people. If you are a patron over at the Bumblecast Patreon, that's patreon.com/Bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every single drawing. If you aren't a patron, you can email in per show and get your name dropped in the hat. So today's winner is...
Samuel P.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
We will be contacting you shortly to let you know, or at least get your contact info so we can send you a book.
Nice work, Samuel.
I'm assuming you listen to the show.
Nice work, Samuel. Congratulations. Take that comic and read it. Or whatever it is you do with comics. I don't know these days anymore. What do people do with comics anyway?
They read them, they collect them, they preserve them. They do things that we won't mention on this show.
Oh boy. Those are the most fun things. All right. Are we ready to get into our main topic for this episode?
I think I am.
Yep.
What are we talking about for the main topic? What do you want? What is it that we cover today?
We are going to be talking about the process of writing. It is the 1 year anniversary of the Bumblecast, after all.
Happy birthday, Bumblecast. We're still doing this for some reason. Happy birthday, Bumblecast.
And of course, the reason your career is based pretty much entirely on writing.
Yep.
So I figure it's probably something you have a few words to say on it, maybe.
Maybe even a few words to write on it.
Yes.
This audio medium. Mm.
Yeah, this podcast does not come in written form, so so you have to use your word mouth to speak.
Yeah. It's something that I've always loved to do. It's something I have always done, and it's something that absolutely terrifies me because it's my only truly marketable skill. I mean, you have other people like Tracy Yardley, Aaliyah Baker, Matt Herms, Tyson Hess, all these people that I've worked with over the years who can color and write or and draw or do character design, or, you know, they have this toolbox, this tackle box of abilities in, you know, the comics that we love so much. And I write good. And that's debatable depending on who you ask.
I think you sell yourself a little short on this, but that's okay. Go ahead.
That's another thing, too, especially with stuff like the Bumblecast and Bumble King, where it is me marketing myself. You know, that's basically what the internet is good for, is
right.
Selling yourself. It's one giant series of billboards across the information highway. And there's this really precarious balancing act of being humble while also telling everyone why you're the most awesome thing ever.
It is very difficult.
Because if you don't sell yourself enough, then it's like, oh, why bother hiring you? You said it yourself. You're not that great. But if it's like, hey, look at all the things I've done and all this accomplishment and how successful I am, it's like, okay, simmer down. Let's dial back the ego there, buddy. You're not God's gift to hedgehogs. All right, let's keep some perspective here. So, and because it's the internet, there is always someone there to check you to say whether you've gone too far one way or the other and why they're right and you're wrong.
Ah, well, there are people on the internet. Who cares?
I do. That's my problem.
I know. I know. To all it is my problem, too.
I care too much about the people's style.
It's true. It's true. I talk a big game, but I don't, really.
But, yeah, writing. It's something that's a lot harder than people give it credit for. Of course, that kind of goes for any profession. You think, oh, I could do that, and then you try it, and it's like, no. No, I cannot.
As someone who struggles with writing, I would agree. Especially creative writing, where it's just like, I write a few things and I'm just like, oh, this is garbage. And I just throw it out and I don't want to even think about it ever again. It's like, getting me to try and write something has been like pulling teeth for the last, it's been a long time.
And see, I can't put that in perspective for myself because it's something that comes naturally to me. Yeah. I'll be sitting there or getting groceries or in the shower or trying to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And something hits me. It's like, oh, that's really cool. I should write this down. There was a road trip I was on where I was 2 hours away from the nearest gas station. And this project hit me. And everything was falling into place. Characters, settings, motivations, themes, the whole thing. And it's like, I'm not going to be able to stop and write this down for a long time. So I had it on loop in my head the entire time, trying to pay attention to traffic and keep this all down. Finally get to the hotel. I'm about to collapse. I'm so tired. It's like, no, get out laptop, write things down, hit save. Hopefully legible in morning. And it was, thankfully, for the most part. But I always feel dissatisfied with myself when somebody asks, how do you do that? How do you come up with all these stories? How do you keep track of all these projects? How do you maintain the voices for all these characters for so long? And I don't really have a satisfactory answer. It's just something I do. And I feel like that sounds really egotistical. It's like, oh, that's nothing. It's just something I do. But it really is. It's mm-hmm. not something I really put a ton of conscious thought into. I mean, I obviously do spend some time getting the finer details ironed out, but it comes to me fairly naturally. I like to think that it's something like naturally gifted athletic individuals. You know, the people who can run extremely well, or some people who just take to baseball very well. They can hone their craft. They can train. They can become better. And they definitely excel at it. And they're not me, for sure. But it's something that comes easily to them. And by that same token, if it's not something that comes easily to you, whether it is something athletic or something creative, you can still aspire to reach that goal and work towards it. It's not something that's barred from you entirely.
Right.
Unless you're me and it comes to dancing, because that's just a lost cause. That's not going to happen. You get smoother moves out of a Fraggle and a cattle prod. It's not going to happen for me. So
nice.
But it's something that I just enjoy. And I had the problem of I can't really stop. So I'll be trying to focus on one thing in particular. And then this new shiny idea will come out of nowhere. And it's like, ooh, let's explore that and unravel it and build it up. And okay, that's nice. Let's do something with it. No, there's a new thing over here. And my hard drive is just full of various projects and writings and such. And one thing that I don't think people think about a lot, I guess, is that different styles of writing really are different. Going back to the sports analogy.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a baseball player, they're an excellent athlete. Plop them in the middle of a football game, and while they'll certainly be able to perform, they're not going to perform as well as someone who has trained as a football player.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who is a creative manuscript writer, which is what I focused on for the past 10 years, may not as easily transition into long-form narrative. I can't write poetry to save my life. I have tried. It just, my brain does not sync up that way. Analytical material, you know, stuff that is supposed to be bare-bone facts for instruction manuals and such, that's very difficult to write because you have to keep it in a fashion that is clipped and informative without being so dry it puts you to sleep.
Right.
And that is a talent that I think if I'm in the right mindset, I can do all right. But if you're not ready for it, it's really difficult because you either get kind of purple prosy partway through or you get it too dry, like I was saying before, and then it's like you don't want to read it. It's like a really well-written Wikipedia article.
Mm-hmm.
The folks who have written the best articles out there, they have that nice balance of the information, but it reads smoothly. You feel like you're carried along in what the material is. The bad ones, or any article online you've read, any blog post that kind of puts you to sleep, you can feel it when you're going through why it isn't working. You're not following their thought process. The sentences kind of make you stumble along. You kind of wonder where they're going with all of this, or you stop and go, wait, what was the point they were making earlier? How does that fit? So it really says something to someone who can make it all feel cohesive.
Yeah.
There was one thing that I always hated, just despised, growing up and when we were dissecting works of fiction in English class. Was looking for the symbology and looking for the author intent and taking it apart piece by piece. You know, are ducks a symbol? Why were the drapes blue? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And at the time, I wanted to just tear my hair out. It's like, it's just the story. It's like that because that is what the author wanted. And yes, there's some deeper understanding, but at the same time, they also want you to read the bloody story.
Yeah.
Stop tearing it apart. And I realize now that, at least for me, it's more of an approach to see how to construct a story. If you know what you're doing, if you know what pieces are being assembled and why they are connecting, things come together a little more easily. If you're just throwing things at a page and hoping that they make sense, it's not going to work. Unless you're a genius, in which case I tip my hat to you because you're a better writer than me. But, and then that gets into the whole thing of author intent versus reader interpretation, and that, oh, that's a debate that we can do a whole show on by itself.
I've always found it kind of fascinating to, you know, take an analytical look at a writer's, at what a writer has written, and figure out their intent or, you know, determine symbolism or if anything means that thing. But, I mean, ultimately, in the end, it is just a story, really. I mean, you can glean a lot from that, and you can learn a lot from it, but it really just boils down to it's a story.
Well, I think also in that debate, I think what it comes down to is what is more important,
mm-hmm.
I guess, which
right.
Really, if you want to get all philosophical, you boil that down to pretty much any debate.
Pretty much but anything, yeah.
To me, I feel like they are individual ways of interpreting the work, and thus they are both equally valid, and that the deciding factor of how important it is to look on how it has influenced the world at a larger scope over the long term.
Mm-hmm.
The author may intend their story to mean X, and for whatever reason, the readership has interpreted it as Y. The readership is technically wrong, because that is not what the author has intended.
Right.
But the readership is correct in that that is what the author has created.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it becomes a question of how does X or Y influence the greater collective consciousness? And that's a really heady topic, and I feel kind of silly even addressing it when I'm writing Sonic the Freaking Hedgehog. But at the same time, you know, it's how does it influence the way that the readership views the franchise?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a key example is the Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter channel, @Sonic_Hedgehog, which in less than a year almost single-handedly revitalized public opinion of Sonic. Because it was self-effacing and tongue-in-cheek and snarky, and it had that little bit of that 90s vibe to it, a little punkish attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
It reminded everyone why Sonic was cool and why it was fun. And we've covered this before, but that's a prime example of author intent and readership reaction and how it affects things in the broad term.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that in tweets, which is not strictly text. I mean, there's also, you know, the graphical side of things to augment it. But the intention of putting out the material out there, I think, is, you know, a very nice immediate example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. How do you view things like tropes or analyzing tropes in works? Do you feel that that's maybe looking a bit too much into it, or do you think that it's a valid way of sort of, you know, putting things into similar things from different stories into kind of groups or however you want to view it?
I think it is an aspect of writing that needs to be paid attention to. It is a tool. It is an analytical way of approaching things. But I feel like it's something that if you stare too deep into that abyss, it's going to look back into you.
Right.
I've had more than one occasion where I have thought myself into a stupor because it's like, well, I'm following this trope almost word for word, but it is also a natural extension of this story. Well, how do I switch it up a bit? What can I do that will go against that grain to potentially make it more interesting? Am I overthinking it? Is it really just something that needs to be? Is this trope fun? Who cares? Let's run with it. Give it a little bit of fan service. People know what they want, and this is what they want. Give it to them. Well, is that just pandering at that point? Do I need to pull it back? Do I need to do something against convention? You know, tick people off on purpose so that they enjoy it in the long run. It's there's no hard and fast thing with writing when you get down to it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, you know, sentence structure and story arc structure is an attempt to codify, I guess, what is really a much more intangible process. And it's good to go in with certain mechanics in mind to give yourself some structure so that you're not just, you know, all over the place.
Exactly.
You don't want to watercolor outside the lines here, but at the same time, you can't let the mechanics rule everything you do, because otherwise you're not writing a story, you're doing a math equation.
Yeah.
And if I want a math equation, I'll get a textbook. That's the...
Yeah. Yeah, writing is a very different thing from math. You don't want to approach your writing like a math problem. That's not good.
No, not really. And to get... I'm meandering. To get a little closer back to the point, I think tropes are something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Something to be aware of so that you aren't doing something that's hackneyed. But at the same time, you can't live in fear of, oh, this has been done before, because it's all been done before.
That's my problem. That's pretty much my exact problem. And I know that. I know all of this stuff you're saying, and it's still like, I just want to throw everything out because it's like, oh, I'm just ripping someone else off, or I don't know. Or I just don't feel confident in my abilities or whatever. I don't know. I just haven't had enough practice. That's a lot of it. But motivation is tough, at least for me.
Oh, it is. It is. And there's some days where I could crank out two scripts in a row, and there's some days where I just don't want to think. So
yeah.
And that's, speaking of tropes and writing, it's the one thing that I hate the most is to fall into that, you know, trope of the creative writer. It's like, oh, I'm just not inspired today. I'll sit by the seaside and maybe the crashing of the waves will spark the muse within me. And I absolutely hate that mentality. It's the Brian Griffin of Family Guy type of thing. I hate it. And I especially hate it when I fall into that myself. It's like, no, this is a job. You are a creative individual. Get out there and create.
Yes. How do you balance that sort of work life, I suppose?
Honestly, I'm still trying to balance it out, because the internet is a wonderful thing in that if I need a reference, if I'm not sure if I'm using the word correctly, if I'm using this turn of phrase wrong, I can go online and immediately get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that can lead into, oh, well, that was an interesting article, or that was a fun cat video, or, oh yeah, I haven't checked my email in the past 5 minutes,
yeah.
Or
also a problem I struggle with.
you turn on the faucet of knowledge and you drown in it.
Yeah. Or you turn on, you turn on the faucet of mindless entertainment and you drown in it too. Either one.
Yeah, what
either one.
I'll take what is Skinner box, Trebek?
Yeah. Something like that.
A lot of it comes down to, it's not right, but personal restraint, personal accountability.
Mm.
Holding yourself to a professional standard.
Right. That, yes. It,
it's like, I need to get this done. I know what my goals are and I know what my constraints are. Let's just do it. Stop waiting for the muse to strike. Stop waiting to feel inspired. Do it. Because all the thinking that you do, all the pre-planning, all the world building and plotting doesn't mean a thing if it's only in you. You are not a time capsule. They're not going to dig you up in 150 years and say, oh, he had such great ideas. Get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, take the time to refine it, of course, but get it out there. Because once it's out there, it will be consumed, it will proliferate, it will be your own little viral thoughts spreading out and infecting the imaginations of the world. Total global saturation.
More like domination.
That got dark. Mm. And again, there isn't any, you know, exact rule of thumb to do it, especially nowadays with the internet. You have no reason not to publish it. Your own personal blog, whether it's your thoughts, random articles, poetry, song lyrics, it doesn't matter. You can be out there with little to no effort, which at the same time means you're that one special snowflake in the pile of other special snowflakes. So getting noticed, getting recognized, getting acknowledged is even more difficult. But at the same time, getting out there is less difficult. So I don't know. It's... I feel like I'm babbling at this point. There is no hard and fast way to approach it. It's just a matter of doing.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. Now it's just the matter of doing. That's where I personally need to go. But
as a wise puppet once said, do or do not, there is no try.
Yes. Yes. He did in fact say that. All right. Have we, in fact, just about exhausted this topic, you think, for now?
I think so. I mean, I would love to address it even more in depth, I guess, in kind of like almost a lecture series. But I think that would require more time and preparation and dedicated thought rather than just us hanging out here on the Bumblecast.
Yeah. Maybe we could set something up like that. Maybe we could do a series of Bumblecast specials or something like that. I don't know.
Welcome to this special edition of the Bumblecast, where Ian pretends to know what he's talking about. Moderating is Kyle. He will giggle whenever Ian says something stupid.
Mm, he will just giggle whenever Ian says something. It doesn't have to be stupid. Kyle is just very giggly. That's just how he is. See, he did it again. Anyway.
Now this episode, we actually have an ad. We haven't had one of those in a bit.
Yeah.
This one comes from our one-time guest and regular sponsor, Daniel H. And he says he'd like to give a big tip of the hat to the ladies over at the Blue Dory Inn on Block Island. Aside from running a pretty cool bed and breakfast, they get extra cool points for helping him after an accident in which a rogue wave sucker-punched him off a break wall into some rocks.
Oh, that, sounds great.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very comfy.
No, not at all.
Long story short, he left the island with a fractured foot and a sprained wrist. Moral of the story, never take your eye off the sea. She is a harsh mistress, which I think we can all agree on.
Yes.
Bonus moral of the story, if you're ever planning a vacation to Rhode Island, be sure to check out Block Island and look up the awesome gals at the Blue Dory Inn. They even have a story time and cookies and lemonade. I don't know, I'm sold on it.
I like cookies and lemonade. I'm there. I've never been to Rhode Island, but let's go.
I haven't been either.
I'm sure.
There's a lot of states I've not been to.
I'm sure it's a lovely place. I hear it's very small. I don't know how small it is. Like if you just step in it and then you take one more step and you're out of it again. I don't know how that works.
Well, I mean, just look at the name. It's just a road.
That's true. It is an island, even.
Waka waka, Rhode Island.
All right. Well, I'm ready to get into some Q&A. Are you ready to get into some Q&A, Ian?
let's get to that Q&A. If you would like your question answered on the Bumblecast, either submit it to bumblecast@yahoo.com, tweet it to us at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleJCRB with the hashtag Bumblecast, or be a patron at patreon.com/bumblecast and ask it in any of the comment sections or notice directly. We really are very casual about that sort of thing. And if you want to add a little $5 to the mix, you get put on the priority queue so that your questions will be answered first and everyone else just gets in the line.
All right. First one comes from Esai C. This is the Patreon priority Q&A here. Pie in the sky question. If Nintendo ever gave you free license to adapt the narrative of any main series Pokemon game of your choosing, which game would it be, and how would you approach its pacing and character development? What personality would you give to the protagonists in general?
Oh, wow, that's a big one.
It's related to writing, though.
It is.
It fits with this episode.
I almost feel like this could be the topic of an episode, not just a Q&A thing.
That's true.
Off the top of my head, I would probably either go with Emerald or Platinum. Just because, to me, those felt like the most solid approaches to the story, and it did a nice way of combining the two alternate versions into something cohesive. I lean a little bit towards Platinum, just because Cyrus was such a cool villain, and he meets such a spectacular, crazy end in Platinum. You're not familiar at all with Pokemon all that much, are you?
Not particularly, although if you're saying Emerald, I'm totally down with it, just because Mudkip's in there.
I mean, the game's been out for a while, so I guess spoiler warnings or whatever. In summation, Cyrus is the leader of the bad guys for Diamond, Pearl, and then the third game, which combined it all, Platinum, who had a very nihilistic approach to it all. Instead of stealing Pokemon so that he could, you know, run the underworld or reshape the globe because he's an eco-terrorist, he basically just wanted to wipe everything out because the universe sucks, reset it. And to do that, he more or less kidnaps these three special Pokemon, rips these special gems off them, and uses those to summon two godlike Pokemon, and literally rips open a hole in space-time trying to find another critter. And he gets lost in the abyss that is beyond reality.
That's pretty dark and hardcore for a Pokemon game.
It is. I'm upselling a little bit because, you know, it's Pokemon. They didn't get too grim with it. But it did kind of toe that line of, wow, I can't believe you're really going there. So, and granted, the Distortion World was not very in-depth in terms of gameplay or content, but it was still so different. It was neat. In terms of how to approach the protagonist, I'm not quite sure without having actually done a little bit of research into them, and I'd have to go through the story arcs of the games to see which would be more appropriate or how to better pace it. I would definitely want to keep both the male and the female protagonists as active members in the story, either as partners going throughout or as friendly rivals. But that really is an interesting and deeper question, so I'm not sure.
I was kind of like the idea of both the protagonists of the game kind of going through together as a team. So I think that would be pretty cool if you approached it that way. But
I mean, I would also love to approach the original and tell Red's story with Green, and by Green I mean the girl, not Green. That was Gary. I know there's a lot of back and forth over whether he should be blue or green or Gary or blah, blah, blah. We're not getting into that. But at the same time, Red's story has been done so many times that I kind of feel tired of it. And I really feel like Emerald and Platinum stories have not been explored as much and could be done in a fun way.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Zephyr Flame. Cassia and Clove must have been very young when they joined the Empire. Which begs the question, how does one go about joining the Egg Army?
A lot of it is volunteer forces, folks who just want a quick grab for power. Others are intimidated into joining. You know, the Egg Army controls this region. Why are you not part of the army? And some of it is out of desperation, you know. In Cassia and Clove's case, Clove needed a way to save Cassia. Eggman had an answer. It was a false positive, and it's leading to worse things, but at the time, it was her only solution. And we'll be getting more into her thinking and the backstory of that later, but there's a variety of reasons. One of the things, I don't know if I'll ever have enough time to properly delve into it, which is a shame, but the Egg Army is not a bunch of, you know, mustache-twirling villains. There are certainly bad people in it.
Right.
But some of them are there by circumstance.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to touch on it, I'm sure, but how, if we'll be able to really get into the moral quandary of it all, I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes.
That's one thing I've liked about the Egg Army, really, is that actually I think most of them don't really seem to be outright evil, or to necessarily want to be outright evil.
No, some of them are more self-serving than others.
Right, but they're just more there out of circumstance rather than out of any need to be evil.
Or, except for Thunderbolt, she's just a jerk.
Well, yeah, of course, of course. I do like her, though, she's funny. And I think you should go ahead and read this next question, Ian.
Yes, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Justin G says, love the retrospective on Daytona and Virtual Racing series. One of my top three 32X games was Virtual Racing Deluxe. I was wondering if there were any additional info or let me try that again. Sorry, Justin. I was wondering if there was any additional info or details on this title compared to the Genesis and Saturn games released around the same time. Kyle?
Well, you're in luck, because Virtual Racing Deluxe for the 32X is actually my favorite game in the Virtual Racing series.
Well, ain't that a coinkydink?
Yeah, I like this one a lot. It adds selectable vehicles, so you're not just stuck with the open-wheel Formula One racer. You've also got a prototype endurance style car. You've got, and also what's called a stock car, although it looks more like a sports touring car than anything. It's kind of weird. It's not quite a Daytona style stock car, but they call it a stock car, so whatever. It's fine. It also adds two more tracks, and it only came out a couple months after the Genesis Virtua Racing. So it seems a little redundant. Now, there's the fact that hardly anyone had a 32X at the time. But at the same time, it seems kind of silly to be like, yeah, we just released Virtua Racing on our flagship platform. Now let's do it again.
Only 32 times better.
Yes, yes. Virtua Racing on 32X has a little bit better frame rate, I want to say. The resolution is a tiny bit better. It's kind of hard to tell. I'd really have to take a look at them in depth side by side, and I just haven't had the chance to do that. But from what I remember is that the 32X version is a little bit smoother. It also didn't require extra hardware, so it doesn't have an SVP chip like the Genesis Virtua Racing release does. Graphically, it's about the same. You've still got nothing but untextured polygons, pretty much. The music is fantastic. It's Naofumi Hataya, who some of you out there might recognize as one of the main composers for Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2. She's mostly redoing the music that was in the arcade game and in the Genesis game. But there's also some new tunes in there. The replay theme is really great, and it's a brand new song specifically for that version. And as far as how it compares to the Genesis version, the Saturn version, the Saturn version just has, again, a higher frame rate and better resolution. But the port to the Saturn was done by a completely different development company outside of Sega. It's really kind of weird. It's like Sega licensed it to a Western company, I believe. I want to say it was like Time Warner Interactive even that did it, which is really strange. But the music is all CD quality. Of course, it streams from the CD. It's all done on live instruments for the Saturn version. And again, the resolution and the frame rate are better. It's probably the closest you can get to the arcade experience at home, aside from the music quality, or the music in general, which is obviously not the same as the original arcade version. And that's about it, other than the Virtua Racing Flat Out that was released in Japan as part of the Sega Ages series for the PlayStation 2. I think it also came here as part of the Sega Classics Collection, I want to say. That was a remake, which is basically a port of the arcade version with improved graphics. Although they didn't add any textures, they just increased the polygon count. So you have slightly more polygonal, polygonal flat graphics. It's kind of weird. They also put reflections on the car, so the car's all shiny, but it's still just a flat, flat polygon. So. But yeah, it's fun. And that's the last time we've heard anything from Virtua Racing. It seems to be even more forgotten than Daytona at this point, which is very sad. They didn't even have a reference to it in Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed or anything, which would have been a prime opportunity for it, but oh well. Maybe next game, if they do another one, which I really hope they do another All-Stars Racing.
I would accept another All-Stars Racing, but what I really want them to do is flat out take a note from Smash Brothers and do All-Star Brawling.
I like it being a racing game for their massive multiplayer crossovers rather than a fighting game. It sets it apart, and it's very fitting within Sega, because Sega to me at least has always been associated with that racing style. So having it be a racing game makes
sense. I'm not saying abandon that. I just want my mascot brawler, not a fighting game. Not your Street Fighters.
Well,
not Mortal Kombat's. Your mascot clobberers, which you pretty much have nothing but Smash Brothers. There was that PlayStation one, but
and there was also the Sunsoft and Konami one that no one remembers.
I don't think I even heard about that one. But,
yeah, there was a weird one where it was like, this was actually the first time Solid Snake appeared in a crossover brawler before Smash Brothers.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it also had Bomberman and Optimus Prime for some reason.
Now you're just making stuff up.
No, I'm absolutely 100% serious. It had Simon Belmont from Castlevania and a few other ones. But yeah, Optimus Prime is there for some reason. It's because he's originally from a Japanese franchise.
Huh.
Not Transformers. Transformers is just a big mashup of various Japanese properties. I think GoBots is like one of them. So that's why some of the designs don't necessarily match up.
We Optimus have to come Prime back to this and do a show on it at some point.
I think Optimus Prime is in there, and I think his name is Convoy instead. It's very strange.
You just shattered my world.
Yeah,
I don't know what to think anymore.
You want to do a mascot brawler episode of the show? We could talk about that. I'm down.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I haven't played all of them, but I've read about a lot of them, and that's one I've seen before and been like, what is going on here?
But for now, we're going to move on to the standard Q&A.
Yes. All right. We got one here from Diamond X Blitz. Did you always want to become a writer? What inspired you to become one?
Well, we kind of covered that on this show. I also touched upon it with the new blog feature over BumbleKing.com, Thursday Thoughts. But just to go over it again, I feel like I've always wanted to be a storyteller. And since I can't draw, writing is what I have to fall back on. And I think a lot of my early confidence came from my parents both being supportive of it, and my dad basically showing me that you don't have to be a writer to write. Writing is what makes you a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of feel the dreams thing. You write it, it will be read. So there you go.
Were there like any books or stories you read when you were young that made you like really want to knuckle down on being a writer, or is it just something that was like always ingrained in you?
I don't know if there's
100%.
Anything. It's hard to say what books actually made me want to write, I guess. I know there were a few that just stuck with me in terms of, this is a really good story. I wish I could tell something that was that memorable. There's a young reader's book called Maniac McGee that's kind of surrealist humor mixed with slice of life stuff. And it's a good read, even now if you're well aged out of it. Orson Scott Card, before he went crazy, did a number of books. Ender Game, most famous of them. But if you want to read a book that is really hard to get through, is Treason, which is a science fantasy story. And the amount of crap that the main character goes through is just mind-boggling. But, I don't know, it felt kind of satisfying to go through all that torture. I don't know, it's weird. It sounds really weird to describe it that way. And I guess to a more broader extent, growing up on all these old ancient Greek myths and other ancient Egyptian myths, and the fact that they kept changing depending on which version you read, it's like, these are the core stories, these are the basic ideas, and they are free to be interpreted and retold over hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And with that kind of freedom, I think with that kind of mentality, you can go into writing going, this is my story and this is how I'm telling it. And that kind of takes away some of the shackles of, well, it has to be perfect and it has to be done this way. No, it doesn't. It's your story and this is how you're telling it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you can't just, you know, put on blinders and say, well, this is my way and therefore it's, you know, without, can't be critiqued. That's setting yourself up for failure. But take the stress off yourself saying that I have to do it this way. You don't. Do it in a way that works, both for you and for the reader.
Awesome. All right, so let's move on to the next question here from Metal Skulk Ban. He has a Mega Man question. How does the copy chip work? Does it steal ammo from the Robot Master or make its own? Is there a limit to how many weapons he can carry or for how long? I would assume that he is Mega Man.
Yeah. This is totally on-the-fly conjecture here, so don't take it as gospel truth. But given that there seems to be a fair amount of energy to material and back again transitioning, like Mega Man being able to become fully armored from nothing.
Yeah.
I would imagine the copy chip is able to read the schematics within the other Robot Masters on how they convert energy or matter into their projectiles and applies it to Mega Man systems so that he is generating the ammo or whatever it is. His systems are modified by the chip. We're going to say that for internal memory reasons, he's only compatible with 8 weapons at a time. Wink, nudge. And whether or not he can hold on to them or he has to drop them, I think is an interesting question. The initial explanation I had was that he does not want to be a fighting robot, so he does not hold on to the excessive weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Mega Buster is hardwired into him now, so he can't get rid of it. But he has a civilian form, so it isn't necessarily like he's armed all the time.
Yeah.
But if we were to ever go back to the book, it might be interesting to see what would happen if he held on to the weaponry for too long. Like, is it a burnout for his system? Can he not maintain that much data at the same time? I don't know. It'd be fun to explore.
From what I remember of the Ruby Spears cartoon, they really played it rather nonchalantly with the way the copy chip worked. It was just like, yeah, I touched you, now I have your powers. It's really weird. I don't know if there was, did you do that in the comic?
Yeah, we kind of used the same general idea that he was able to use tactile interface to read what was in the other robots and copy it over.
Okay.
It just seemed really weird. We didn't play it quite as,
just seemed really weird in that show. Yeah.
Well, that was the Ruby Spears cartoon. The show did all sorts of fun things.
The show did all sorts of, yeah, the show was a bit weird on its own, so.
But yeah, like, I think there's, I can't remember which issue it was, but there's one point where Mega Man is in the middle of a firefight with some of the Light Robot Masters, and he just kind of tags somebody as they go, they high-five to transfer the data over.
Yeah.
But that's in a scenario where they're, you know, actively working to do that. It's not like it's the casual, everyday way of copying info.
But I think there's been some forms where some forms of media where it's been copying has been ended in or because of the death of the robot master. Is that right? Or am I making that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think some of the interpretations is he blows them up and takes the remains to get the tech he needs, which is a little dark for me. And yeah, if you want some of these robot masters to come back later, it kind of begs the question, well, who rebuilt them exactly as they were, you know?
Right, right. All right. And we got one last question here from Tabby. So, Ian, how does it feel to have done the Bumblecast for the past 25 years?
You! You know what? It's been a blast. I've enjoyed all 2,500 years spinning up here in my cryogenic pod. I haven't gone senile at all. Beep, boop, robot voice.
2,500 years of dealing with me. That is enough to drive anyone crazy.
So, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Bumblecast. Is there anything you want to plug or mention before we sign out, Kyle?
I am just gearing up for Nintendo November, a big event that I did last year on KNGI, on Game Fuel last year. Basically, I did every episode of the show that I did in November. I had a special theme for the playlist. So last year I did like a Metroid show, and I finally did a Mario show last year.
You rebel.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I had never done a Mario episode of Game Fuel before. I don't know how I don't know. It was weird because I'd done over 100 episodes at that time, and I'd just never done it. So this year I am doing it again, and this time I'm asking for input on playlist themes for the shows that I'm going to do this year. So if you head on over to kngi.org, you can vote in the poll on the front page there on the sidebar, or just click poll on the top navigation bar. And you can vote for the top three, your top three favorite Nintendo franchises that I have listed there, that you want to see me do a special episode dedicated to the music of. Right now we got... I'll go ahead and give you the rundown of who's in the lead right now, what the results are currently. Right now Donkey Kong is on top with 5 votes in the bag for him. Followed just behind him is Kirby. And then after that, we got the RPG and strategy playlist that I'm putting together, which is going to consist of Fire Emblem, Golden Sun, and the Advance Wars series, or Famicom Wars, if you prefer. And after that, just trailing just behind that, is Earthbound / Mother. And then we got Mario Kart, Kid Icarus, and Pilot Wings, all with 1 vote. But poor Pikmin and Animal Crossing are languishing down on the bottom with 0 votes. So if you want to hear me spotlight the music from the Pikmin and Animal Crossing series, head on over there to KNGI.org and toss them a vote. Or any of the other franchises I mentioned. Anything you want to plug before we head out of here, Ian?
Oh, there's tons of stuff I want to talk about, but I just can't do anything yet! Head over to BumbleKing.com. I've got a weekly blog there. Go on to Twitter at IanFlynnBKC, where you can keep up with everything I've got going on. And as soon as I can start talking about stuff publicly, oh, you're going to be hearing about it.
Nice.
All right, before we wrap up the show, we're going to give a big shout-out to all the patrons who made this show possible. Your continued support is greatly appreciated, guys. You have no idea. Big shout-out to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, Deus Miles, Yams88, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell T., Daniel L., Samuel P., Justin G., Jennifer R., John M., S. Yavarovich 9X, Alex P., and James K. Once again, guys, thank you so much for helping us get along.
You guys are awesome.
One last time, happy birthday, Bumblecast!
Woohoo! 1 year of the Bumblecast!
And we'll see you in 2 weeks for Bumblecast episode 28. Take care, everyone.
See you later.
Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.